B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, it's 4:30 on the Mike Missinelli Show. That means 4:30, it's time to update our Twitter poll. And a lot of people are not as angry with Embiid as the Twitter poll would maybe indicate. Twitter poll brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons, Natalie Aganoff.
Thanks, Mike. Over 1,000 votes on this one today. Do you think the trolling is a big deal? 22% say yes, 78% say no.
All right. 78% say it's not a big deal. And no, it isn't a big deal, except for the fact that there's no reason to have a war with fans. I don't think at any level it does you any favors. But let's talk to a man who covers the Sixers and the great drama that his team provides a reporter. He covers for Philadelphia Inquirer. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. His name is Keith Pompey. Oh, Keith, the drama that goes on with this team.
Oh, brother. Yeah, it's crazy, right? I mean, another day, another night, you know?
All right, let's go back in time here with this. He was obviously cheesed when they got on him a little bit. And see, we can walk the steps of this. It started off with a bad performance and Shaq and Barkley. And that triggered fans to kind of look at him now closely because now they're calling him fat and lazy. And so when he takes the 3-point shot and misses, it fuels the fans to get on him. And then he counters with the troll. What do you make of all this?
You know, I think that Joel is a little frustrated. I also think that, he probably thinks that, hey, I'm Joel. I'm the process. I'm the guy that you guys love. Mm-hmm. Why are you coming down on me? He's the type of guy who basically feeds off of that type of stuff on the road. But then when you come home, it's supposed to be different. And I feel as if that, he's frustrated by the way he's playing, the way the team is playing. And I think that, everything is just a chain reaction to that. I mean, that's how it is. And that's how we got here. In regards to the trolling, I don't know if it was a troll or not, because when a guy is frustrated, you may say some things, and Joel is extremely calculated. But, I kind of think that, the way it went and the way that the dialogue had and the way fans were upset, that of course you're going to come out, even if you're not trolling. I'm not saying he wasn't, but even if you're not trolling, you're going to come across as if you are,
Yeah, I don't think he was. I think that he gets ultra sensitive. And that was a manifestation of it. He wanted to give it back to fans. And then, he saw a reaction and it was like, I'm just trolling you. But that's just my read into it. Now, here's the question I have for you. Is it beyond players to put the criticism in perspective? Because let's face it. The fans right now, the Sixer fan base, is looking at this team like they're scrambling to get into a position where they can actually win a playoff series. Forget about playing for the Eastern Conference Championship. And that has fueled fans' frustration to look more critically at certain players.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a fueling people to look more critically at certain players. And let's face it. I mean, this season thus far has been a disappointment. Elton Brand said it. Brett Brown said it. And, Embiid hasn't been playing to the level that he's used to. And, we're both from this area, and I'm one of these guys. I remember when I used to go to Sixers games and right out of college and someone didn't play well, I'm with the crowd. I was booing, too. And it wasn't because I hated the person. It was just that, as a Philadelphian, you feel as if that effort is unacceptable. That's just how we are. So, I think it's one of those things where, at the end of the day, you have to know that. I mean, it's not the first time that people have been booed. So it's just one of the things, you deal with it, you play hard, and hard play is rewarded in this city.
Damn, Keith, you were a booer?
What are you doing? Yeah. Heck, and let me tell you this, man. One time we went to D.C. I was living, in the South, and a buddy of mine was staying in D.C., and I saw a horrible game. It was the Wizards playing another bum squad, and I stood up and started booing. And everyone in there was like, what's wrong with this guy? And my buddy's like, he's from Philly. And they're like, oh, okay.
Wow. let's look now at what we have. They have to work in two new players into this rotation now. How do you think the rotation works from this point on? Who's the guy out? Like, how do you think he'll handle this, Brett?
You know, it's a tough spot for Brett because when you look at it, you know, I say from the forward spot, let's just say Glenn Robinson the third. I mean, he's going to take the minutes that they wanted to give to James Ennis. You know, he's an upgrade of James Ennis. But then, you know, right now you're seeing that Furkan, you know, one of your biggest, you know, one of your favorite
my
players.
My boy, yep.
Yeah, your boy, Furkan is playing better. And then you see how they have a lot of confidence in Shake Milton. So you're looking at it, and if you're Alec Burks, you're saying, where are my minutes going to come from? I mean, really, if you want to just base it off a resume and stuff like that, you know, Alec Burks, he's the guy that you would assume that will get the majority of the minutes. But, you know, right now, you know, Furkan is playing extremely well. The Sixers have a lot of confidence and Shake. And then we also have that Matisse Thybulle factor. You know, it's just going to be tough to me when you try to squeeze all of these guys in.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
You don't think that that Shake will be the odd man out and they'll vault Alec Burks over him?
You know, I think initially, I mean not initially, I think over time that's going to happen and the right, and I think that when you first go out there and you make that trade, that's what you think. But then at the end of the day, you look at how Shake's playing. You know, Shake really hasn't done anything to say that, hey, this guy, you know, deserves to lose some minutes. You know, now again, he's a second round pick, a late second round pick, a two-way guy last year. So you look at it and you say, okay, man, you don't have the resume. But at the same time, you know, it comes a point where, you know, when guys are playing well and they say to themselves, like, man, I did everything coach asked me to do. They wanted me to be the starter. Now all of a sudden they go out and they get this guy. And, you know, and now all of a sudden my minutes are like smashed, you know. So it's I mean, again, you assume that it's going to be Alec. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you think that a guy has to be rewarded for what they're doing on a court.
All right. Let me you're the guy inside the locker room. And I know a lot of people want to know this because a lot of people comment on it. The dynamic between Ben and Joel, I don't think a lot of people understand as well as you, obviously. What is it? Do they like playing with each other? Do they not like playing with each other? Do they like each other? Does it matter if they like each other? What is it?
You know, I don't think it should matter if they like each other or not. You know, I mean, I'm just going to say they have distinct personalities. You know, Joel is more of a guy who keeps to himself, whereas Ben Simmons is like a guy that everybody wants to be like, wants to hang out with. And the thing is, they're both young guys. They come and they're both capable of being franchise players. So I think that what they need to do, and they're both young, and you know, and with that comes endorsement deals and everything like that. I think what they need to do is they need to learn how to play together. Because let's face it, you know, when Embiid's around, it's his team. Everything goes through him. But when Embiid is not around, it's like, okay, Ben, you're our guy. We want you to excel. We want you to do everything. And when you're young, it's kind of hard to go from being the man and having success as being the man to all of a sudden it's like everything has to go through Joe. And I'm not saying that Ben is jealous of him. I'm just saying if it was me it would be hard for me at a young age when I want to be that alpha dog and I have an alpha dog personality to basically, defer. And I think that's where the friction is between the both of them, because both of them want to be that guy.
So they're both frustrated by each other's game, it sounds like.
You know, I don't know if it's by each other's game. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the Kobe kind of Shaq type of thing. But the only thing, can you imagine if they both came to the league at the same time? You know what I mean? It's like, whose team is it? You know, like everyone says, we want you to be to play together and coexist. Well, yeah, that's great. We can do that. But at the same time, who's the mate? Like, who is it? You know, like, you know, let's face it. When the six games that Joel Embiid was out, Ben Simmons was phenomenal. I mean, people may not like Ben Simmons. They may claim that, you know, he disappears in the fourth quarter, which has happened at times, a lot of times. But it just seems like during that stretch, you know, Ben Simmons was that guy. And now all of a sudden it's like it's Joel Embiid's team. So you can no longer be that guy. I mean, I think that it's really up to the coach to find out a way that we can make both of these guys coexist and make both of them feel happy, feel like they are the man. And so, you know, that's what I think the problem is. It's just hard. There's only one ball. There's only one ball.
All right, so then the last question is this. Are you then of the mindset that this team will not flourish until they anoint one as the man and move the other one?
You know what? I think what they need to do is I think they need to get some pieces around both of them that's going to make both of them, happy. Like, you need some shooters. You need some other stuff. And, again, I know we keep saying that, but it's just that it was funny how it worked 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, I know Ben had his struggles, but 2 years ago, we weren't talking about these two guys competing because you had Furkan, excuse me, you had Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, right? So we weren't talking about they can't coexist. The problem is right now, when you have a team, when you have a team the way it's constructed, it's like both of these guys need spacing to operate. Well, when you don't have other pieces around it, that's where they get frustrated because only one of them can be the man. Only one of them can get to that spot. You understand what I'm saying? So that's part of the problem as well, because I think if you get some pieces around them and both of them can excel, then it would be a whole lot better. But again, that's up to the coaches. That's up to the front office. They all have to make it work, because the easy thing to say is, one of them has to leave. But the fear is, if you let one of them leave, what so happens if they turn out and be the guy? You know, I turn out and get an MVP award. Then you're looking like, man, we let the guy go too soon. You don't want to do that.
Do you see a miracle journey that can happen with this team?
This year?
Right now, yes.
No, sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just don't. I don't.
All right. And I don't either. So I just wanted to ask you whether you think these two new guys coming down the stretch, you don't see it.
Nah, I don't. I don't see it happening.
All right. That's honest. Keith, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
All right. Keith Pompey, Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Well.
Kept it all the way real.
Yes, he did.
Interesting that he didn't take he thinks there have been other people who have said that they need people. There are certain complementary players that would help both of them. JJ Redick was one of them.
Yeah.
He created space for both of them. So minus and JJ hurts Ben and Joel in a way. And maybe that's.
I wish they could complement each other, because what he's saying is they can't complement each other. Like, Ben's the man when Joel's off the floor. When Joel's back on the floor, it's run through Joel, and that's a problem for Ben. I don't want it to be a problem. You know, I don't know why you can't have it. Can be both of their teams.
Because one does at some point have to shoot.
Yeah, well,
that's hard to work around over a full season.
That's the big elephant, obviously.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.